San Francisco makes it 4 straight against the Dallas Cowboys. Welcome to the show, Maggie Gray, Andrew Perloff. That one got a little dramatic at the end with Dak Prescott had a chance to lead the Cowboys down the field, Pearl, to win the game and couldn't do it. Couldn't do it. 4 downs, 4 passes. One should have absolutely been intercepted. One probably should have been caught. That would have been the 3rd and 10, but it wasn't. And then trying to go for either defensive pass interference or something on the 4th and 10, and it was just not to be.
Do you know what's an ill-fated Cowboys pass play? One that does not land in CeeDee Lamb's arms. I mean, honestly, I love Kevontae Turpin, but he had no chance on that deep ball. It actually was a beautiful pass by Dak. And then the last play, I will say there was at least a chance for DPI. Obviously, there was a chance.
Which there's always a chance in this NFL.
Because the NFL, the cornerbacks are so lazy about it. I mean, there's so much hand fighting. It's tough on the officials. They did not throw the flag. But that game, I guess, could have ended differently. It didn't matter. I mean, getting into the end zone was not going to happen for the Cowboys. You know why I know that? Because every other time against the Niners in this situation, they did not have that successful last drive.
No, they had 2 touchdown passes to CeeDee Lamb in the 4th quarter, got the Cowboys back in, but it kind of felt like just the 49ers just totally relaxed and all of a sudden had to be like, oh no, a game broke out. Here we are. And unfortunately, or fortunately, I would say this was probably a good last stand for the 49ers defense. They did not throw it to CeeDee Lamb on the final 4 plays of this game. Should have been intercepted on first down. Then it was Jake Ferguson, Turpin, as you said, and Jalen Brooks was the last ditch effort. So
I'm going to look at the all 22 later, but I'm assuming there were about 5.5 guys on CeeDee Lamb.
As there should be. But yeah, Dak couldn't even find an open guy.
Can we talk about it? So last night was the breakout game for Ezekiel Elliott. I think, what, he had 30 yards? I mean, it's sad. I'm sorry. Like, you will, when you tell the story of the Cowboys this year, it's going to start and end with not signing Derrick Henry. I know that sounds stupid. Just one player does not make all that difference. But how they cart out Ezekiel Elliott and Dalvin Cook in the year 2024, they just cannot run the ball in any real way. So that means Dak is getting teed off on all the time.
It's amazing to have this kind of miscalculation on a year when you said, oh, we could just go into the season with any kind of running back. Yeah. We're going to be fine. And this ends up becoming the year of the running back. You know,
The
running backs become super important. And also, Rico Dowdle didn't play in this game because of an illness, but there's some question marks on whether that was...
Oh, I don't know. He looked healthy.
What was the severity of that? Listen, people were saying on social media, respected people, Ed Werder, others, you know, you have Rico Dowdle out signing autographs before the game. If you're that sick, why are you doing that?
Listen. Yeah, also, are you contagious?
Well, yes. I mean, that would be a great question. They're outside. I don't know if that matters. But yeah, it's not good. It's not good for Dallas. I'm predicting that the season is big time over. Now, we should give some credit, because the Green Bay Packers, on the flip side of things, going down to Jacksonville, okay, they're a much better team than the Jaguars, but anytime, Perloff, your quarterback gets hurt, like happened yesterday, all of a sudden it's just a wild card. So Malik Willis, who has appointed himself very nicely while Jordan Love was absent and injured earlier in the season, he comes in, they're able to close out the game against the Jaguars. But I want you to listen to Matt LaFleur, the head coach of the Packers, on Jordan Love's injury. Now, it's not the knee. It's not the knee that he hurt in Brazil in the season opener against Perloff's Eagles. Now it's a groin issue. Here's Matt LaFleur.
No idea. But obviously, high level of concern anytime a guy is in there. And he did it early in that first drive. And I think everybody could see him struggling to move around. And it got to a point where we didn't feel like, and he didn't feel like he could protect himself. Went with Malik.
Yeah, they pull off a last minute victory, 30-27. It was dicey, but this is the big thing. Okay, you escape with a win over the Jags. Good for you. Way to keep things moving. You got the Lions coming up this week, Perloff. We know these are the 2 best teams in the division, and I mean, no disrespect to the Vikings, but these look like the 2 best teams in the division, and everything's going to come down to these games, and now you've got to hobble Jordan Love.
I sit him. Just throw this one out. If it's questionable. I mean, he stayed out there with a groin injury, so you think he could play and he'll probably try and play. The dude came back so fast from a knee injury. Obviously very tough, but this, you have a bye after this, so you can afford to rest him for 3 weeks. It looks like he needs it. I would consider sitting him. I doubt they will, unless the groin injury is worse than I think. I think he'll play. But this is going to be a very tough game if he's not 100%. I will tell you, you mentioned the year of the running back. That's why I'm not counting out the Packers at all, because Josh Jacobs is a perfect marriage with that team.
Okay, so one thing, though, about the Packers who face the Lions next week that you just have to consider, okay? These are two teams that are going to be duking out. And listen, maybe the Lions are just the better team, and maybe they're going to win this division. It doesn't matter. But the Packers are right there, and this is the Packers' home game. This is the one in Lambeau. You know, the one in Detroit, do you feel like that one? It's like, all right, if you're going to split with these guys, don't you have to do everything you can to try to win this game at Lambeau Field?
I don't know. I mentioned home field earlier, but is home field a thing anymore? You know, it seems like it's less important these days. I think I got to double check this. I think they got killed at home by the Lions last year and then got them in Detroit last year.
Yeah, they did.
So, I'm not too worried about that. You got to look big picture. I feel like the Packers and the Lions are at the point where there's only one goal, and that's to get to the Super Bowl. So the big question is, what's better for our long-term health?
I'll tell you what, for the Packers, this is not a cupcake back half of the schedule here. You got Detroit, then the bye week, as Pearl said.
Yeah.
Then you're at Chicago. Then you got the 49ers. We'll see if Miami can get their you-know-what together by November 28th. That's going to be a Thanksgiving game. Then you're at Detroit, at Seattle. I know yesterday the Seahawks didn't play well, but that's generally a tough place to play. So you got some big games coming up.
I mean, I think you're going to be measured against your NFC North opponents. They, talent-wise and maturity-wise, they should be able to beat the Bears twice, but those are going to be battles. I mean, that rivalry, the first taste of Caleb Williams, because they've owned the Bears. Obviously, usually that's 2-0. We'll see how that works. So Jordan Love has taken that mantle from Aaron Rodgers, the ownership. There was a passing of papers. That, to me, is a big test. All they have to do, the Packers just have to get in and survive Jordan Love. Although Malik Willis, is he our favorite player or what? Just that little guy's out there making plays.
So Perloff loved Malik Willis before the draft. When
Love
I say
him.
Loved him.
And he was at the combine and he gave all his clothes to a guy on the street. It was the most heartwarming combine moment of all time.
That really was. And there's not many heartwarming combine moments, I guess. But that was definitely a top five, I guess. You loved Malik Willis and then he just dropped like a stone, sunk in the draft. And
well,
then,
third round. That's not.
Well, we thought he was going to be a first rounder.
Yeah, that fell apart toward the end. Like, it became clear he was going to be a first rounder. The fact that he was a third rounder is actually pretty good, because he did not look like that at first.
And by the way,
all.
He was wallowing away, not wallowing, but he was wasting away.
He looked terrible in Tennessee.
In Tennessee.
Yeah, he looked terrible there. I was like, oh, that was a wasted third round pick.
And then, it was like 3 weeks before the season, all of a sudden Green Bay's like, he's our backup. And
They saw something.
Good for them.
They are really interesting, because Josh Jacobs, if he can control the ball, the defense needs to play a little better. I think Jacksonville's the best bad team in the NFL. Like, Trevor Lawrence still throws some beautiful passes. You're shaking your head. Like, their offense is still super explosive when they want to be. They're not going to win any games because they are poorly coached and kind of a mess. But that was a really fun game.
Yeah, you get the sense. Would they have won that game with a different coach? I don't know. Christian Kirk also broke his collarbone. Right? Christian Kirk broke his collarbone. Okay, you're welcome to weigh in. We're on in Milwaukee. We're back on in Milwaukee, and we're so thrilled to be back on Milwaukee Radio. So I'd love to know from the Packer fans, how nervous are you with Jordan Love's latest injury? Again, you got the Lions game looming next week. David is in Maryland. I'm so glad someone from Maryland called in. David, go ahead first, ask your question, and then I have a question for you.
Well, actually, not so much a question, but I just want to talk a little bit about the Ravens-Browns game yesterday.
Oh, my God.
I'm a little disappointed. You know, I think the Ravens had a letdown after beating Tampa Bay. And here's the problem with my team, the Ravens, you know, and it's been problematic, not just yesterday, but earlier this year, you know, against the Raiders. Seems like we always take these relatively bad teams. I'm not saying Cleveland's a real bad team at 2-6, but they're a relatively bad team, and this game should have been winnable for the Ravens. But when you go in there, just, you know, you take for granted, and you don't have the intensity that you have against some of the good teams, you end up losing these games. I knew before the game started this was a trap game.
Yep.
I knew the Ravens probably wouldn't have an opportunity to win because of the unfortunate situation of taking the bad teams for granted. But
yeah, David,
as a Ravens fan, you know, I like to see them try to play the game right and hard every game, you know, and don't let up just because you're playing a 1-6 team. And they've been problematic doing that, like, against the Raiders
earlier this
year. And even against the Chiefs this year, I thought, you know, as good as the Chiefs are, I thought that should have been a winnable game, the first game only because they decided to call him out on a toe.
Yeah, you know? Wait, hold on. I got to put you on hold for a second. I want to ask David a question, but I got to be able to get one word in edgewise here, which is the Ravens defense does not look like the Ravens defense. And even with all that said, Pearl, Kyle Hamilton had a chance to just flat out end this game, and he dropped an interception.
One of how many dropped interceptions were there? Jameis threw the ball. He hit the Ravens in square in the numbers at least four times. It was incredible. Like, whoever is designing the gloves for the Ravens defenders needs to go back to the lab because they cannot catch anything. They obviously should have won that game. Jameis was great, but he definitely threw it straight at the Ravens multiple times and did not get picked off.
Without a doubt. And that was, you know, Cleveland. Is it back on in Cleveland now? Should they have just listened to the fans? You could have done this 3 weeks ago. Maybe you'd actually still be in the playoff hunt. Oh, wait. I want to go back to David for a second. David, you're still there. I have a question for you. Because in the other game in the D.C. area, you had the Washington Commanders pull off an all-time epic Hail Mary to beat the Chicago Bears.
Yes, sir.
And David, I said to EJ and Perloff last night, they should call it the Delmarva Miracle. And they both said, what's Delmarva?
Right. That was a fantastic game. I knew he was going to catch the ball. Jalen Daniels is really a great
But David, you know what Delmarva is, right? You've heard of this?
Yes, I live right near there.
Yeah. It's Delaware, Maryland, Virginia. Delmarva. They call it the Delmarva area, and you guys never had heard this before in your lives?
I heard DMV. That's what DMV. When I talked to my fiance who's from Maryland, she refers to it as a DMV.
The DMV, okay.
Which is D.C., Maryland, Virginia, which I think was me and Perloff's issue, because is Delaware really part of that? We thought Delaware was more Pennsylvania.
What does Andrea say? Because I didn't know about this.
I forgot to ask her last night. She was walking the dog, but now hopefully I can text her this morning and she can give us an answer.
I didn't know about this, but I went to college in Washington, D.C., and that's where I first heard the term the DMV, which is D.C., Maryland, Virginia, but also Delmarva. And Perloff, you got really territorial. You're like Delaware's Eagles country.
Well, yeah, I'm reading, and David said he lives near there. I'm reading it's an actual place. It's the peninsula that juts off, so it's not the entire metropolitan area. You know how it's shaped there?
Yeah.
So are you sure that
Chesapeake Bay?
Yeah, that it's considered the Washington. Yeah, is that? Maybe David can. Is David still there?
Yeah, he's still there. David.
David, is it just a peninsula or the entire three-state area?
Well, you got the peninsula. You got, you know, Salisbury, Maryland, and you got, I know you've all heard of Salisbury, Maryland, Ocean City, Maryland. Everybody loves to come here, you know, for the, you know, summertime. And, you know, you got, you know, Delmar and some of these other places up here and Whaleyville. Yeah, it's a great place. You know, Ocean City's actually, you know, one of the, you know, about 35 miles from where I live. It's one of the best beaches, you know.
David, I'm going to be honest. The more you're talking, you sound like Mel Kiper. Does anyone tell you that?
No, they never have.
He's also from Maryland, isn't he?
Oh, yeah.
Yes, he is, yeah.
Oh, man, David, you've got a future as maybe a Mel Kiper impersonator. That was great. Solid call all the way around. Thank you.
So I Googled Delmarva. The Delmarva Peninsula, also known as the Eastern Shore, embraces the state of Delaware and the Eastern Shore counties of Maryland and Virginia, bounded on the west by the Chesapeake Bay and on the east by the Atlantic Ocean. It comprises a distinct geographical region. I never heard of it. I haven't really been there. I've been to Annapolis. Is that part of Delmarva?
They're calling it the Maryland Miracle for now. That's fine, but I thought Delmarva could have been cool. Let's go to Joe. He's in California with a thought on the weekend from the college ranks. Hey, Joe.
How you doing today? I just called to see a couple weeks ago, me and you both picked Deion as we would pick for a coach, me looking for a head coach. So I was going to think about Deion now.
I mean, how about Deion in Colorado, Joe? Bowl eligible. So 6 wins. It's a success. The season has been a success. Thank you for the phone call and pointing that out. Shador and Travis Hunter are fantastic. It's been, by all accounts, besides all the off the field, Deion going back and forth with the media, all that, just football wise, Perloff, this has been a successful season for Colorado. I don't know how you could paint it otherwise.
Well, I mean, yeah, you beat Cincinnati Bearcats. Let's treat this like it was, I don't know, Georgia beating TCU 65-7. Like, honestly, like the hype. Everybody jumps off and on the Colorado bandwagon. Aren't people's ankles breaking? Like, this was a win over Cincinnati. I think the hype is getting back up. Somebody called it the biggest game in Colorado franchise history during the game because, like, they're now bowl eligible. I'm like, okay, you're beating some average teams. Let's see it against the good teams down the road. You have a couple of more substantial games. So, honestly, yes, I just think the hype machine is getting... it's getting revved up again. I saw it last year. I just wonder if it's all real.
Haven't they won a national championship, by the way? How is it the biggest win ever?
They kept talking about the bowl eligibility like it was a huge deal yesterday, which is good. And yeah, no, it's been a great story. But I think that people are like really poised to call this Deion thing at the biggest success in all of college football. It kind of feels like there can't be any like, it's a nice win over the Cincinnati at home. There can't be any of that talk with Colorado. It's got to be hyperbole.
Okay, well, they won 4 games last year. Now they've won 6. They won 1 game the year before Deion got there. So this is obviously, they're on the right path. It's a good trajectory.
Well, except for the fact that Shedeur Sanders and Travis Hunter are leaving after this year.
So I think that's the thing, right? This is why this is unlike any other, you know, 6-win team that we generally talk about, is because Shedeur and Travis are so good. I mean, how about Travis Hunter, my preseason Heisman pick, with over 100 yards receiving and 4 pass breakups? I mean, it's an impossible thing to sustain. But Perloff, when it's right with Travis Hunter, it is right. And, you know, Shedeur should be talked about more with the Heisman. He really is a fantastic quarterback. Yeah, I know it's Cincinnati. This is not Sauce Gardner Cincinnati. But at the same time, he's delivered. This is going to be the offseason of Shedeur, and who and how high is he going to be drafted?
Yeah, I just saw there was a new draft ranking on Matt Miller. ESPN had Shedeur as the top quarterback, but he was number 10. So I'm curious, like, he's probably the best quarterback right now, but is he a number 1 overall kind of guy? That is, I think, TBD. Usually if you're the 10th best player and you're a quarterback, you go number 1.
Yeah, but this quarterback class is not really shaping up to be like what we saw last year with 6 guys going in the first round.
No, I think you'll get 3 or 4.
Wow. Well, we've got a long time to talk about that, but Shedeur definitely should be more in the mix. Let's go to Big Easy, who's in New Orleans. Cha-ching, Big Easy, another winner for your wife last week.
Good morning, Maggie and Perloff. Yes, she decided to go ahead and play your Bills this week because she was just really happy about the win this past weekend I told you about.
Yeah. Well, and, let's recap it for the audience. Thought, you guys had your anniversary, right? 20 years.
Yeah. And 20th anniversary, and I won on that, but she wanted to play your Bills this week because she started listening to the show in the mornings when she has a coffee now that she wants to hear your show and see what it's all about. She can't understand a couple things. I had to explain to her. She's like, why does Perloff hate his team so much? I said it's complicated. He's a Phillies fan.
And, it's not complicated. I'm a Philly fan.
Enough said. Yeah.
And she's like, well, she understands that you don't bet on your teams and so forth, but she really likes your show. She did bet. She did win. She doesn't understand why she's got to play a VIG because I said, well, if you want to win 100, you got to play 55. And I talked for at least 10 minutes about a VIG.
Yeah,
haven't done that in a long time. But, you know, she loves the show now, and she listens with her coffee in the morning. Oh. I did have Washington. I fell off the chair. I had played both teams this past weekend, and it was really a hard Saturday for me because LSU lost. Yeah. The Swifties were everywhere, and it was just it was a tough weekend for me, you know. So I was glad to finish the weekend.
Well, Big Easy and now Mrs. Big Easy, thank you so much for continuing to support the show. Yeah, that LSU loss, Big Easy, that's tough. We're going to get more into it, but Texas A&M made a big change at halftime, bringing the backup quarterback, and it just seemed like it put LSU on their heels. Nussmeier, the quarterback for LSU, who was in the Heisman conversation, Perloff throws 3 interceptions in that game, so that wasn't going well. And yes, I did see the Swifties taking over Bourbon Street, Taylor Swift in town, which means the Swifties were out in full force. I've never seen like a 9-year-old in the middle of Bourbon Street singing Taylor Swift songs. Did anyone else catch this?
No.
Does not sound like the most safe situation.
Well, it was daytime.
I'll repeat, does not sound like the most safe situation.
Yeah.
They get lit in New Orleans 24/7.
You're right. It's very much feels like a part of the culture, although we're generally more in the touristy areas when we do go there. But yeah, Swifties in full effect. A little different vibe on Bourbon Street when it's the Swifties.
Yeah, I wouldn't call Bourbon Street Disneyland. Let's call it that.
Think Taylor Swift's ever had a grenade?
Honestly, probably.
Probably. She parties a little bit in her off time, right? We always see her in the Chiefs game,
true.
Drinking wine, chugging beers and stuff.
Well, I was at my fiance's best friend's house yesterday for football Sunday, and there was a lot of conversation about Taylor, her lack of interest, it seems, to be hanging out with Brittany Mahomes anymore.
Oh, really?
I mean, when's the last time you seen them together?
Politics, right?
Maybe she kind of used her as like a welcome to the team.
Mm. Got to make nice with the quarterback's wife.
Yeah, and then as soon as that's over, you're like, all right, out of here.
They were together at the U.S. Open. That wasn't that long ago.
Yeah,
the tennis one.
I mean, I've never seen four people together, and it felt like one person was so far away from the rest of the crew
but one,
as Taylor was.
One thing about that, so now we're getting into their stuff, but so Brittany Mahomes is pregnant. And I've been that pregnant person around people who are partying, and you do feel like you're a million miles away. It's like, I'm not even on the same wavelength as anybody. I'm here. My ankles are swollen. I'm fat. I'm bloated. You know? You don't feel like partying.
Taylor should date a 49er because George Kittle's wife starts the party. I mean, that is a team where the wives are tight. Or girlfriends are tight. I don't know. It's actually wife, partner.
The Wags.
Yeah, I think she has the wrong team because you're right. There's a lot going on with the Mahomes family. I get it. But all of a sudden, Travis Kelce's back.
He is back, and the Chiefs beat the Raiders yesterday, 855-212-4227. Okay, lots to get to. Every Monday, we do the M&P 500. Whose stock is up and whose stock is down after a big weekend? We'll tell you next.
The M&P 500 on the Infinity Sports Network.
All right, welcome back, Maggie Perloff Show. Stock up and stock down from an extremely busy sports weekend. Maggie, get us started. Whose stock is up?
Stock is up for the Washington Commanders. Let's hear it again. We're going to play it for you all morning long. Commanders, Bears, the top two picks in this past year's draft. It was a weird game, and it ended with a crazy Hail Mary from the Washington team.
Here comes the Hail Mary with the game on the line. And the ball is caught! Caught! It's a miracle! It's Noah Brown! Oh, my goodness! This town is going crazy! It's a madhouse in Landover, Maryland!
He did it!
Awesome, amazing Jim Nance call. Romo almost nailed it. She's got to lay out just a little bit more, Tony, but we're getting there. Incredible, and Commanders have won six of their last seven, and the vibes couldn't be better in D.C. after they were terrible for, I don't know, 20 years.
Yeah. I'm stealing something from you, Maggie, for my first stock up. You called it the year of the running back earlier in the show. I agree, and there is one running back who stands above all else. There is one. It just makes me so happy to watch this guy because it reminds me of when I was a kid watching Billy Sims and Barry Sanders. Mm. Jameer Gibbs is the superstar in the NFL.
I thought you were going to go with Barkley. Barkley.
No. Saquon Barkley's good. Jameer Gibbs is utterly spectacular.
He is.
He had a 70-yard run, but he averaged 11.5 yards per carry. He is, to me, the special sauce of the NFL right now. Like, I put him in primetime every game. Every time he touches it, you have no idea which way he's going to move. I love Saquon Barkley, but he's not maybe early rookie Saquon Barkley. Jameer Gibbs moves three ways at once. He's like the Matrix. I am infatuated with this dude. Obviously, the Lions, 52-14 over the Titans. Afterwards, Dan Campbell said, we didn't even play our A game, but they are so much fun, right? It's like greatest show on turf, Rams, and he's Marshall Faulk, and Jared Goff is Kurt Warner. I'm in love with this team. I know I'm an Eagles fan. I'm not saying that they're ahead of the Eagles. I'm just saying I absolutely adore the Detroit Lions.
They are definitely fun
America's
to watch.
America's team.
And somebody gave Jameer Gibbs the Sonic the Hedgehog treatment on social media where he's like running through the rings.
Yeah. They've done that. Yeah, that's great. Boop, 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 boop.
It's awesome. Although I think the Matrix would have been a good nickname for him, but that was Sean Marion's nickname. But still, I mean, Marion hasn't played in a while, so I kind of like the Matrix a little bit.
He's not really the major. Yeah, maybe that's an overstatement. But you know when running back's coming at you and the defender clearly doesn't know if he's going left or right? That's Gibbs.
Well, if we're going to go stock up, we got to go stock down. And for me, Anthony Richardson, I just don't understand it. I'm not sure what's the truth and what's a lie. So mm-hmm. Anthony Richardson, after getting sacked on a play where it looked like maybe he hurt his shoulder, he taps his helmet to leave the game. And this was his explanation.
Man, tired. I ain't gonna lie. That was a lot of running right there that I did. And I don't think I was gonna be able to go that next play. So I just, just told Sam I just needed a break right there.
I'm sorry, what? You were tired? No. If you're hurt, you want to get your shoulder together. That's one thing. But Perloff, the quarterback can't take him out himself out of the game when he's tired.
I wonder if there was more going on there.
I think, is he lying to cover up for the shoulder?
Because it was, well, no, it was a really scary lower leg. Somebody grabbed his calf. It looked like a real injury. The tackler wrapped him up. I'm like, oh no, Anthony Richardson just got hurt again. And the narrative around this dude is he can't stay healthy. I thought he was worried about his leg because it was a really, really scary tackle for Colts fans.
Right, but then he did take himself out of the game. He took a knee on the sideline and then he went back in.
He said he was mad tired. I think he was a little bit concerned about the injury there too.
That's what I'm saying. Like, if you're going to lie, come up with a better lie. No?
I don't think he's lying.
Because if
he probably was tired, but
he's tired.
He's got several issues with running. He's not running in a safe way right now.
Okay, that's fine. A lot of things to address with Anthony Richardson. You're a young player and you're a mobile quarterback. You can't be tired. Josh Allen doesn't get tired. Lamar Jackson doesn't get tired. I mean, they do, but they don't take themselves out of the game. Caleb Williams, Jaden Daniels, Brock Purdy, for goodness sake. These guys are running. You cannot take yourself out of the game.
I think Donovan McNabb's off the hook now, right? For throwing off. At least he stayed in the game.
Oh, my goodness gracious.
I would say that's issue number 657 on the Colts. Like, they got real concerns about it. There was a play. Did you see at the end where he didn't run out of bounds? Like, ah, dude.
He wasted.
Do you have any game
seconds.
Awareness whatsoever? And also, let's face it, his passing numbers are just god awful.
If Joe Flacco is in that game, they probably beat the Texans.
If Joe Flacco is in that game, they're probably in the AFC title game. What are they doing here? Richardson was 10 for 32 for 175 yards. His performance was a little better than 10 for 32, but there is a deep problems with him at quarterback because everyone knows Flacco's better right now.
Do you have a final stock down for
us? Yes. This is a little controversial. Sean Payton, what are you doing, man? What are you doing? Up 28-7, runs two massive trick plays against the Panthers. Like, karma will come at you, Sean Payton, and you think you can just do whatever you want. I get, maybe I'm defending Andy Dalton, my Panthers guy, and of course, I'm sure most people don't agree with this, but like running a fake punt and then running a fake field goal, like, I just thought it was a little tacky. And I think Sean Payton, he's pretty polarizing right now. I feel like he's easy to dislike the way he's running the Broncos.
Last year, first game of the season, he did the trick onside kick, like he tried to reprise the Super Bowl. This is back before you had to announce and declare onside kicks. He's trying to get too cute. Did you see after the game, he said they're just not a good offense?
Yeah, I did.
See J.C. Horn getting in his face being like, bro, was that, bro?
Yeah.
By the way, speaking of people getting each other's faces, we will talk about the Seahawks and their dust up between teammates yesterday.
Was wild.
It was weird. It like wouldn't stop.
That team, by the way, I mean, I know he's a new coach, but he doesn't seem to have the slightest idea what's happening there.
Yeah. Mike McDonald, he doesn't look, he looks like one of those coaches. And again, this is just from the TV. You'd have to watch the All 22, who doesn't talk to anybody on the sideline.
Very Robert Saleh-like.
Yeah, but I don't want to paint him with a negative picture when I haven't watched the All-22. But I never see him. Like, Leslie Frazier's coaching on that team? I've never seen them speak once on the broadcast. Or maybe he's in the booth. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm not sure if Leslie's on the sideline, but it's a weird team. It's a weird team. Every week is unpredictable.
They got to start really thinking about quarterback and rebuild and what's the future. I mean, are they going to be 8-9 for the next 10 years? At a certain point, like, you got to rip the Band-Aid. I love Geno. Big fan of the story. He's not going anywhere on that team. I would almost, like, start to ramp it down if I'm Seattle.
But they were in first place in the division. And they're kind of a young team.
This is not an old team at all.
Well, I know, but are you gonna do it with Geno again next year? Like, where are you gonna get your quarterback? I think that they're gonna probably be ready to move on.
No, I agree. I'm just saying, like, in terms of ramping down, I meant like the rest of the pieces. Like, I mean, I'm not trading any of those other guys. Like,
who? No, you're right. They have a good nucleus, but they need a solution at quarterback. And I'm again a big Geno fan. I just don't think this team is built to do any and make any real noise in the NFC.
We will get more into the Seahawks in just a moment. Manny Rodriguez is here doing updates for us. Good morning, Manny.
Good morning. We're sponsored by Progressive Insurance. Protect your family, your phone, and your furry friends with life, electronic device, and pet health insurance. The Browns, led by Jameis Winston's 334 yards through the air and three touchdowns, they shocked the Ravens 29-24. One of the plays that we'll remember from this game was Kyle Hamilton dropping a pick that would have sealed the win for Baltimore.
Oh, I started praying instantly. You know, I started praying instantly. Like, it was only by the grace of God. And I think when situations like that happen, you always sit back and you're like, man, I still got the stuff to work on, right? Because it could have been a matter of whatever. Who knows how we would feel right now if that would have happened. But I'm so grateful that that was an if. And ifs and shoulds and woulda, couldas don't mean nothing in this game.
Winston and the Browns would...
Wait, I'm sorry. Can I bring up Jameis Winston... Reminds me of someone who you strike up a conversation with a stranger on like a plane or like a subway or a bus or anywhere you'd be standing in line at the DMV and then you instantly regret it. And you're like, oh no, I just made small talk with somebody who won't stop talking and has been waiting their whole life for someone to be like, hey, crazy weather we're having.
Jameis Winston is a cartoon character.
Yes.
I mean, quoting Eminem, he don't know that the Browns don't have a logo on their helmet.
Play for the decal on your helmet.
We don't have names. It's like this guy is this a bit? What's going on with him?
Definitely. He gets so much praise on social media. Like, he's going to keep it going till the end of time. Yeah, I think he's made a post football career out of all this. I mean, guy's a good performer.
No, but like, I mean, you could be right. It's just that other teammates have said even when the cameras are off, he's like this. Like, we saw Gerard Mayo, yeah. Gerald McCoy said the eating the W speech. He said the speech in the locker room was way worse. He said we didn't hear any of that stuff. He said it got you know, the eat the W speech was actually kind of tame compared to his locker room speech, which was totally off the reservation.
Yeah, him becoming like a darling still doesn't really square with me, but he will find a camera, man. He's a good talker. Back to you, Manny.
Winston and the Browns, they would go down the field later that drive after Hamilton dropped that sure interception for the game-winning touchdown. The Ravens, they fall to 5-3. The Browns, they improve to 2-6. Despite a late push, the Cowboys could not overcome a third quarter in which they were outscored 21-0 and outgained 167 yards to 16. They fall to the Niners 30-24 on Sunday Night Football. Cowboys are now 3-4. The last time they were 3-4 with a healthy Dak Prescott was back in 2018. What say you, Rain Dakota?
Yeah, take it one at a time. Similar to that, as you said, been here before, 2018. I mean, obviously, me personally, I don't know how many guys are still on the team from then, right? Me, Zeke, Zach, a couple of the veterans. We know what it takes in this league. You get hot, you can get rolling, and that's all you're looking to do. So that's my point about this is frustrating, but nobody's giving up. Nobody's been as shook as you can say. From where we're at, we just got to focus up.
Yeah, focusing up would be a good idea. They sit in third in the NFC East right now, ahead of the Giants, who are 2-5 and are in action tonight at Pittsburgh. A couple more NFL scores. The Texans, they tire out the Colts 23-20. Ladidi McConkley, he scores twice in a Chargers 26-8 win over the Saints. After starting 2-0, New Orleans has now lost 6 in a row. Long flight, no problem for the Bills. They beat the Seahawks in Seattle 31-10, and the Falcons, they beat the Buccaneers in their orange creamsicle jerseys 31-26. To the NBA, there was another celebration yesterday in Wade County. The Miami Heat unveiled a statue of Dwayne Wade outside Kaseya Center. The 8-foot statue is the first one erected outside the Heat's arena in its 37 seasons. One issue: the statue that depicts the moment Wade stood on the scorer's table after an OT win against the Bulls in 09 looks absolutely nothing like D-Wade. And the memes that have been generated, well, they are generational, including this one.
Like, that's crazy. I can't believe that. Who is that guy?
Yeah, Dwayne, who the hell is that guy?
Yeah, that's Wade himself, kind of. When he said that, he was saying, this is an out-of-body experience. I can't believe I'm getting a statue. And he goes, and who is that guy? I think he meant it as, wow, how did I get here? But it's being taken as literal. Like, I didn't recognize
it. Looks nothing
him.
Like him.
It looks like a monster that would have eaten Dwayne.
The Heat will host Dwayne Wade's statue night during tonight's matchup against the Detroit Pistons. Guys, you guys want to feel old real quick? Today is the 21-year anniversary of Wade's NBA debut.
Oh, boy.
Oh, yeah. Back to you guys.
Thank you, Manny. Oh, that was like a punch in the stomach. So we got more with the statue?
We have the party was yesterday. Today is the game where we honor it. He'll speak at halftime as well. This, of course, coming a couple of days after Pat Riley named the court after himself at Kaseya Center. So fun times in Miami.
Why? It's funny. Like, why did they feel the need to do all this stuff back to back to back? You know,
I'm looking at the statue now.
Go ahead. He
got the body right.
I mean,
the part that he screwed up with is the face.
I mean, the things to screw up,
and the hair. He didn't really get that right either. Like, is this like a version of what Dwayne Wade's going to look like when he's 60 years old? I don't understand.
That's a tough look for Dwayne.
Well, the funny part too is Dwayne Wade is kind of thought of as maybe one of the best looking athletes.
Good looking dude.
Yeah, and it's the same thing with the Cristiano Ronaldo. It's like the better looking the guy is in real life, the uglier the statue is. How is that fair?
I guess
I think this is worse than the Cristiano statue.
Oh,
I'm calling it now.
This one's worse. Ronaldo's terrible. He's got the crooked smile.
At least the hair is kind of on point with Ronaldo. There's nothing on point with the Wade statue. The Ronaldo one is harder to look at, though. I will say that.
Our pal Trista Crick had a hilarious social media post yesterday where she's like putting up statues that are in the Louvre. She's like, we used to do good work. I'm like, yeah, I don't think Michelangelo was making this one, clearly, and not a disciple. We are far, far away from any of that stuff.
Shouldn't Dwayne Wade, so like they do an unveiling, and this is the first time he sees it. I feel like they should be able to see it before it gets unveiled. Because I think if he saw this, he would have said, I think you guys could go back to the drawing board. This is not good enough.
I don't know. That's kind of like seeing the bride before the wedding day in the wedding dress. I don't know. That just kind of ruins it.
Bad luck?
Yeah,
but now we got this terrible statue outside the Miami Arena.
But what's he supposed to do? Do you think he'd really say, guys, back to the drawing board, melt this thing down and start from scratch?
It is made of bronze, so it is worth something.
He should. He's got money.
Scrap metal?
Yeah, I'm sure the Heat and Dwayne Wade really need some money right now.
Manny, thank you very much. Lots more to do, including... Do we have the biggest threat to one contender? We'll get to that next, Maggie Perloff.
Every one of us have an individual responsibility to go out there and fight for each other. Represent the names on your back, represents the names that's on your helmet. Well, we don't got no decal. So represent the bounds.
You're listening to Maggie and Perloff on the Infinity Sports Network.
Jameis Winston basking in the victory yesterday. And listen, for the Browns fans, I'm happy for them because they were right. Browns fans were calling for Deshaun Watson to be benched. Now, that never happened. He ended up getting hurt, which you hate to see. And Jameis Winston came in, and they looked a lot better. Now, granted, the Ravens still should have won that game, Perloff. They absolutely should have. If Kyle Hamilton catches what might be the easiest interception of his entire career, and this is even going back to Notre Dame days, then they probably win the game, but they didn't. And maybe the Browns have a little bit of life. Maybe. A little bit of life.
The Ravens coming off short week, traveling to Cleveland, divisional game. It's not shocking they lost this one, but did you see after the game Lamar Jackson threw his helmet down? He was upset. And honestly, I don't think Lamar had urgency the entire game either. I felt like the Ravens, it's funny, losing to a 1-6 team, usually you knock a team off the pedestal. I'm not lowering the Ravens in my power rankings. So I felt like, oh, I was just watching the game. I'm like, they could turn it on. They thought they had the game won. They had no idea. Jameis threw a moonball into the sun to Cedric Tillman. I just think the Ravens were shocked by that. I'm not worried if I'm Baltimore.
No, but Baltimore's defense doesn't look the same. We should call that what it is.
Oh, definitely not. But has that been the problem in the playoffs? It's been the offense.
Yeah, well, definitely last year. I mean, last year against the Chiefs, it was definitely the offense was the issue. So I guess not, but I'm just used to a certain standard of defense with the Ravens. I'm used to them being awesome, suffocating. I'm used to them keeping them in games just strictly on the defense.
But their offense is now they're like the Niners. They just switched it around. Now their offense is dominant.
So, you know, that's a little of one of the big upsets. And by the way, Nick Kostos on Friday gave us that upset. So listening to the Maggie and Perloff show every day of the week is great, but Fridays for sure when Nick gives us his upset pick of the week, and that was the one to pick outright. I want to pause on the Cincinnati Bengals, the other team in Ohio, for a second, Perloff, because, Nick, let's hear from Joe Burrow, please, cut eight. Joe Burrow with a team that just lost to Perloff's Philadelphia Eagles at home by 20. To be 3-5 on the season, had this to say.
I think 10 wins usually gets you in. So we got to win 7 out of 9. That's doable. It's doable. So we'll go from there.
Is it doable? What evidence do we have that the Cincinnati Bengals, besides Joe Burrow being great, and we know he's awesome, but what's the evidence? You came off two games where these are the wins for the Cincinnati Bengals. At the Panthers, congratulations. At the New York Giants, okay. And at the Browns with Deshaun Watson. These are not like signature wins by any stretch. Listen, you play who's on your schedule.
Well, I mean, they outplayed the Chiefs and the Ravens. That was... Let me ask you a question.
They lost these games.
Let me ask you a question. Like, what's the deal with T. Higgins? Like, are you going to have him or not? Because when he's out there, it's a lot like my Eagles with Devontae Smith and A.J. Brown. Like, they're transformed. When you don't have T. Higgins, like, all of a sudden that offense, and this guy who's about to hit free agency, he's a true, true number one. They are just not scary. I mean, it's like you just cover Chase and you're probably okay against him.
You had Jamar Chase out there, you know?
Yeah, but when they have Higgins and Chase going, that's a really scary offense.
Okay, but we talk about... But this is where, listen, Burrow didn't play poorly, but...
I mean, their defense got run over.
Their defense got rocked. I get that. But they were also held to 17 points. And how do you feel about the Eagles' defense? Do you think the Eagles' defense is 100% fixed? Because I don't think you do. And if you're Joe Burrow, you should be able to slice and dice a little bit. You're worried about Dak Prescott slicing and dicing the Eagles' defense. What should Joe Burrow be able to do? He might be the second best quarterback in the NFL, and that's probably not true anymore. I mean, I think
he's pretty darn good.
He's
by the way.
Great, but if you're asking somebody, Mahomes clearly the number one guy, and then Lamar and Josh Allen, I think, are probably the next two.
Yeah,
and Burrow's awesome. I'm not taking away from that, but 17 points. This is not the Eagles' defense is not the 85 Bears.
I don't think there's a real distinction in my mind between Burrow, Lamar Jackson, and Josh Allen. I think they're all right about the same. Do you think those Allen and Jackson are definitely better? Like if it was the Ravens and the Bengals and you in the playoffs, which probably probably won't happen this year, you would say it's a wash. I would think. You wouldn't say Lamar has the advantage. You might give Burrow the advantage because of postseason success.
Burrow went into Buffalo and beat the Bills. So, yeah, I think that he gets the nod. But I don't know. I mean,
he's just
played a better team. You stepped up in competition. I know they were right there with the Chiefs, and I know they were right there with the Ravens. But you should have been right there with the Eagles.
Yeah, I thought they were. They came out with a 9-minute drive. It looked like they were going to dominate the game. And then they just could not slow down Saquon, as Rob Gronkowski called him yesterday. I just think the Eagles dominated the game up front. The Bengals defense, like, who's on that defense, too? Like, if it's not Hendrickson, then who's doing anything? Pretty much nobody. So I think the defense is a big concern. I don't come away. Burrow is really good, by the way. Even yesterday, I'm like, oh, that guy, he throws such a pretty pass.
The one thing about the Bengals defense, though, I know Jesse Bates is gone, but isn't it a lot of the same guys? And Lou Anarumo, their defensive coordinator, I mean...
They're getting torched this year. They're one of the worst defenses in the league.
It's crazy. 855-212-4227. Okay, you're welcome to weigh in on that. Coming up, what exactly went wrong for the Cowboys last night? Well, Dak Prescott.